We are holding on Samachei Amud Aleph by the Mishnah, last line. Continuing on the topic of what you are and aren't allowed to wear outside on Shabbat. Mishnah says, Hakiteya, a person, an amputee, a person who's had, who's missing a leg, Yotze b'kav shaloi, is allowed to go out on Shabbat with his kav, which is a wooden leg. So Rashi explains that, well, this is Divrei Reb Meir, that's what Reb Meir says, because Reb Meir considers that wooden thing to be effectively his shoe. So therefore, just like you're allowed to wear shoes on Shabbos, so is this guy allowed to wear this on Shabbos. Tosfos gets into a bit of discussion, as we're going to go through, about is that the issue in that case, then when the Mishnah continues with another opinion that says that it's also, and Rashi says it's not a tachshit, what would that mean then? I mean, doesn't Rabbi Yossi agree that he uses it as the equivalent of a shoe? So Tosfos discusses the question of, do we say it is a shoe or is not, which we're going to discuss in the Gemara. Is it maybe the issue that we're afraid it may fall off and he's going to carry it? Which Tosfos says, if the issue is that he's going to fall off and it's going to fall off and he's going to carry it, if he only has one leg, how is he possibly going to be able to carry it? And the answer is because he basically doesn't walk using that. He doesn't use the wooden leg to actually walk on. Then there wouldn't be any opinion that says he can't wear it. Rather, he uses walking sticks. He uses crutches or whatever to be able to walk. And just, he has this thing in order to help support himself a little, or in order that it doesn't look like it, or that it's not so obvious that he's missing a leg or whatever. So that would be the question, therefore, whether he's allowed to wear this wooden leg on Shabbos, which in that case comes out from what Tosfos is saying, by the way, that a person is allowed to use crutches or walking sticks or whatever on Shabbos. The actual halacha in Shulchan Aruch is it depends. If the person is not at all able to get around without the crutches or whatever, then indeed they are allowed to wear them on Shabbos. But if you have a person who is able to get around, but they have a hard time without crutches or a walker or what have you, and they're only using it in order to make it easier for themselves to walk, then not. So that's the basic difference. That's the basic issue over here. Okay. Anyway, so the mayor says that he's allowed to wear this wooden leg on Shabbos. But Rabbi Yossi says it's usur because he said, according to Rashi, again, according to Rashi, the reason is because it's not considered a shoe or a tachshit or anything. So that's the thing. So Tosfos explains that Rashi would say that if it's not made out of leather, it's not considered a shoe. Or not, maybe not so much if it's not made out of leather, but more the point if it's not usual to make a shoe out of wood like that. Usually you make shoes out of leather or other materials. And then, again, Tosfos discusses the possibilities that maybe it is, but Rabbi Yossi would say that there's a different reason because it may fall off and he may carry it. Again, given that he uses walking sticks, as Tosfos says, then he has the ability to carry this wooden leg if necessary. All right, continues the Mishnah. The im yeshloi beis kibbutz ksisin, if this wooden leg has in it a space to put in pads of cloth, meaning now you can have the kind of wooden leg or wooden foot or whatever, where just the person puts the stump of his leg into that or on top of that or whatever and ties it on or attaches it on or somehow or whatever and goes out. Or you can have sometimes for comfort, they would have a hollow space in the top of it where they would put in pads and rags and things like that to make it more comfortable to wear. So then, tume, then it's able to be makabel truma. Because if it's not, then it's a pshute clay eight, and it's a plain wooden keli without a receptacle. The fact that the end of his leg goes into it, Rashi explains, is not enough by itself to make it be considered a kli kibble, because it's the opposite. It's not that a kli kibble would mean that you have a wooden keli, and with that you're able to carry something else inside it. Here it would be the other way around. You're using your leg to carry this wooden thing. So it would be exactly the opposite. So therefore, if it doesn't have that space for the pad, then it's not makabel truma. But if it has that space, then it is, because then it now has an actual receptacle. So then it's Metame Tumah. We're going to discuss in the Gemara, actually, the question, what about, is it Metame Tumas Midra? Is it, if the person who's wearing it is a Zog, does it become Tumah from that as well? We'll see about that in the Gemara. Continues the Gemara. Now that's a person who's, so far we're talking about a person who's missing one leg or one foot. What about another case? Now you have a person who has both legs or both feet amputated. So obviously he's not using just one wooden leg. Therefore, what he has is samoichos shaloi. He has things that help hold him up, which means, Rashi explains, that he gets around by walking or moving around on the upper parts of his legs and his knees and whatever of his legs is left. So therefore, he puts on these leather covers over his knees or over the ends of his legs or whatever, and he uses that to walk around on. So again, such things are tumim midras, which is actually all they're made to support his body. The yosid behem b'shabbos, he's also allowed to go out with them on Shabbos because they're considered his tachshit. In effect, those are his shoes. Actually, they're not considered his shoes, as we're going to see in the next thing. They're not considered his shoes, but they are considered his tachshit. They are considered something that's an ornament or an accessory for his body, because without them, he can't walk. So unlike the wooden leg in the first part of the Mishnah, where he could conceivably walk without it, because again, as Tosfos has said, basically he gets around with crutches. Over here, this guy, he actually walks on, or he actually locomotes around. He actually moves around using these things that are attached to his knees or to his stumps or whatever. So therefore, he's allowed to go out with them on Shabbos. V'nichnasin v'hen ba'azara, and he's also allowed to go with them into the azara. Now we learned at the end of Brachos that a person is not allowed to go into the azara wearing shoes. But these things are not considered shoes, because the definition of shoes would be something that go on his feet or on the ends of his legs, and here they don't. They go on his knees. Because again, we're talking about that his feet have been amputated from someplace below the knee. And by the way, you know, at least with the kind of medical abilities that they had in those days, a person wouldn't necessarily have their legs amputated above the knee. In Hilchos Treifas, for example, such an animal is considered treifa because it's not going to survive. Apparently, with a person, it was the same thing as well. Therefore, we're not even talking about a person whose legs are amputated above the knee, because in terms of how it was in those days, it would be impossible for a person to survive such an operation. Therefore, he's not wearing these leather pads on the stumps. He's wearing them on his knees, and he's getting around by going on his knees. So they're not considered shoes because they don't go on the bottom of his feet. Then we have a third case. Now you have a case where a person, he still has his legs, or he has some parts of his legs or whatever, but they've shriveled up, they've atrophied, his muscles or his nerves or whatever no longer work. So now such a person is not even able to get around on his knees. So what do you do for him? So you have kisei v'samoiches tovoi. For him, you have his chair and his support, namely like this. The chair is sort of the equivalent of a wheelchair nowadays, only it didn't have wheels. It was just a little chair tied to his back. On that chair, there are little bench-like things, which are the armrests. When he wants to move forward, what he does is he lifts up his upper body by pushing down on these little benches, on these little armrests that are on the side of him. He pushes himself forward a little, pushes his body a little bit forward. And when he's doing that, he also supports himself a little bit on his legs. I mean, his legs are not able to support his weight anymore because they've atrophied, they've deteriorated, but he's able to support himself on them a tiny bit while he's moving himself forward like that. But basically, he's pushing himself along by lifting up the upper part of his body with his arms on these little bench-like armrests that he has on the sides of him. So you have the chair with the armrests, and then you have the samoichos, which are pads that he puts pads on the ends of his legs, which otherwise are just hanging there in the air. Again, with the idea that this way he uses them a little bit. He is using them a little bit when he's moving himself forward. He supports his body weight a little bit on his legs as he's moving. So we're not going to focus so much on the chair. The chair, obviously, there's no issue with on Shabbos, because otherwise he can't get around. It's like what Tosfos has said about the crutches. The question is going to be about those pads that are on his legs. So Tmei Midras, so they're Tmei Midras. Now, actually, everything there is Tmei Midras. The chair is also, obviously, because it's meant to support his weight, but there's no chiddush in that. The chiddush is more about these pads that are on his legs that he uses to support himself slightly. So they're Tmei Midras because the fact is he does support his body on them a tiny bit as he's moving forward. The Eidiyos in Behem Shabbos, but he's not allowed to go out with those pads on Shabbos because since they're hanging in the air. Now, unlike previous case where the guy has his legs amputated someplace below the knee and he's actually walking around on his knees and he has pads on his knees to protect them, those he's allowed to go out with on Shabbos, and there's no concern they're going to fall off, because no different than a regular shoe that's not going to fall off. But here, where his legs are hanging in the air, there's more of a concern that they may fall off, and then he's going to reach down and carry them, because after all, he can't easily replace them. So therefore, he's not allowed to wear those pads on Shabbos. So again, the chair and the chair itself and the armrest, the little bench-like armrest, he's allowed to, but the pads he wouldn't. The ein nichnasim behind the azara, and he wouldn't be allowed to go with them into the azara of the Beis Mikdash either, because again, since they go on the ends of his legs, then halacha considers them the equivalent of the equivalent of shoes. Okay. So those are three different cases. Again, you got the guy with one good leg and one amputated leg, where he has a wooden leg, and you have the machlokas of Meir and Rav Yossi, whether he's allowed to wear the wooden leg. You have the person who's missing both legs, and he has pads on his knees. Those were saying he's allowed to wear on Shabbos, and he's allowed to go into the Azara. And then we have this guy with the deteriorated legs who uses a chair, where the chair he's allowed to use on Shabbos, but the pads he's not allowed to use on Shabbos or go into the Azara. Okay. The Mishnah finishes off, Loi Katmin Tehorin, Loi Katmin, or Ankatmin is a different use of Rishonim, are Tehorin. We're going to see in the Gemara what Loi Katmin are. Over here, Rashi translates according to, the Gemara is going to give three possibilities what Loi Katmin are, and within those three possibilities, you have a couple of different opinions of Rishonim, which we'll see, but Rashi translates over here according to one of the possibilities that mentions the Gemara, that a lekatmin is a mask that you use to sort of play frightened children. So you put on a scary looking mask in order to joke around with kids and mock scare them, kind of. Anyway, so tahodin, such a thing is tahor. It's not makabel tumah, because it's not considered a tachshit or functional keli or whatever. But the ein yotzin behen, but you're not allowed to go out wearing such a mask on Shabbos, again, because it's not considered a garment or a tachshit or anything. Speaking of masks, by the way, of course, nowadays we have the question, which we touched on earlier in the parak, about whether you're allowed to wear a mask if you're going out because of corona, if you're going out on Shabbos. I've seen where a number of contemporary poskim allow it on various grounds, because it's protecting you from catching germs from somebody else, and catching the virus from somebody else, and therefore it can be considered a tachshit for you, because in some places the government actually requires it if you're going to go out. So some poskim don't like that. They say, okay, so who says you have to go out on Shabbos? So just don't go out then. But you have. I think I saw something, for example, from Chaim Kanievsky. He says that maybe it's allowed, but it's still better maybe if you just use, like, you wear a scarf or something and then use the bottom part of the scarf as a mask. But you have respectable poskim that do allow you to wear masks for coronavirus on Shabbos. All right. Anyway, going on to the Gemara. So Rava asked Rav Nachman like this. There were two versions of the Mishnah going around. One version was that it's the other way. One version was the way we have it is that a mayor says you're allowed to go out with the with, with the guy is allowed to go out with his wooden leg, and Rabbi Yossi says it's osur. But then there was a different version going around that was exactly the opposite. He's not allowed to go with the wooden leg, and Rabbi Yossi says it's mutter. So Rabbi asks Rabbi Nachman which version of the Mishnah is correct. Amalei lo yadina. So Rabbi Nachman says, I don't know. Rabbi asks him, Hilchos Amai, what's the actual halacha? Can the guy wear the wooden leg or not? Again, Amalei lo yadina, and Rabbi Nachman says, I don't know. Okay. So what is it? Itmar, so we said like this, from earlier Amaroyim. Amar Shmuel ein akiteya. Shmuel says the Mishnah begins that the kiteya, the amputee, is not allowed to go out with the wooden leg, and Rabbi Yossi is master it, which in that case would mean that the halacha would be that it's mutter, because generally when we have a machlokes Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi, the halacha is usually like Rabbi Yossi. So therefore it would mean you are allowed to. V'chein Amar Rav Huna ein akiteya, and Rav Huna says the same thing. The correct version of the Mishnah is that Rabbi Meir says he's not allowed to, and Rabbi Yossi says he is allowed to. Omer of Yosef. So Rabbi Yosef says, "Hoy over Omer Shmuel ain't a kiteya, but Omer of Huna ain't a kiteya." Okay, well, if we have Shmuel and Rav Huna telling us that that's the correct version of the Mishnah, and Nami just the ain't a kiteya, then okay, we should also accept that version and say that then and say that that the Mishnah is saying that Rav Meir is saying it's also to go out, and Rav Yosef is saying it's mutter to. However, Masif for Rava Bashira. However, Rava Bashira asks on that. What do you mean? How can Rav Yosef say that we should accept that version, or Rav Huna for that matter? Loi Shmielahu Hod Masnil Rav Chanan Bar Rava Lachia Bar Rav Kamei De Rav. Didn't they hear of what Rav Chanan Bar Rava taught Chia Bar Rav? So that's Rav's own son Chia. Kamei de Rav, he was teaching Chia Bar Rav in Rav's presence, the Kitona de Bei Rav, in a Kiton, which is a small room, in the Beis Medrash, or in the house of Rav, and it was like this, so Rav Chanan Bar Rava was the Malabed, he was teaching Chia Bar Rav the Mishnah, and he taught him in that version, that Ein Akiteya Yosef Akav Shalai Zivir Rav Meir Rav Yosi Matir, that the amputee is not allowed to go out with the wooden leg, says Rav Meir, and Rav Yossi says it's mutter. That was how he was teaching it. But umach ve'lei Rav epoch. But Rav signaled to Rav Chanan Bar Rava, flip it around. Now, why did he have to signal? There's a Gemara in Yuma that mentions a similar thing, where somebody was teaching a Mishnah and teaching it with a mistake, and Rav signaled to him to do otherwise. And the Gemara explains over there that Rav was in the middle of the second parasha of Krishna. So in the first parasha of Krishna, you're not even allowed to signal to the thing. But in the second parasha of Krishna, if you have something like that, where you need to correct somebody, then you're allowed to signal to them. Anyway, so Rosh Hash says maybe over here it was the same thing. Whatever it is, we see that Rav did not like that version. He held that the correct version is the way we have it printed over here, that Rav Meir says it's mutter and Rav Yossi says it's osur. So what do you mean? The Rav of Ashira says. So why is Rav Yosef saying because Shmuel said this way and because Rav Huna said it this way the other way around, then it must be correct. If he should have heard of what Rav signaled over there that's incorrect, and therefore that in fact it is supposed to be the way that we have it. The mayor says it's Moshe. Rav Yosef says it's also, and that's the correct version. Amar Rav Nachman took the Simona Samach Samach. So Rav Nachman Yitzchak says, actually, a good way to remember it is remember two samach. Because then you have Rav Yossi Oyser, which helps you remember, therefore, that Rav Yossi is the one who says it's also. Okay. So that's Rav's version. That's Rav's version, and that should be, therefore, the correct version. Now,
Rabbi Alex, why don't you say when he signaled to him as a gesture, he gave him a chance to correct himself rather than interrupt him and embarrass him.
Possible. Okay, that's certainly possible. He may have done that. I mean, I don't know that it would be embarrassing necessarily to, okay, he had one version of the Mishnah. Again, we just said Shmuel and Rav Huna had that version of the Mishnah too, so it's not like it's blatantly incorrect to say it, but preposterous if he had told him outright. And you find in many places in Shas where somebody is teaching a Mishnah, where one Amora is teaching a Mishnah and another Amora corrects him. There's no embarrassment in it necessarily. Okay, you had a mistaken version of the Mishnah that you learned. So okay, but maybe that was a factor also. Okay. Anyway. So far we have, though, okay, so it sounds like Rav and Shmuel disagree about what the correct version of the Mishnah is. So the Gemara says, the Af Shmuel Hoderbeh. Actually, Shmuel ended up changing his mind as well and saying that the version that Rav said is the correct, which is the one that we have in front of us in the Gemara over here, is the correct version, that Rav Meir says it's Mutter and Rav Yossi says it's Osir, which would result in, again, that the halacha is that it would be Osir because the halacha is like Rav Yossi against Rav Meir. Namely like this, Vitznan. We learn in a Mishnah in the Sechti Yavamas, when it talks about the dinim of Chalitza, Chalitza the sandal she'enei shaloi, if the woman does chalitza with a sandal that does not belong to the yavam, so nowadays you have, I mean, the sandal has all kinds of different rules and regulations how it has to be made. Obviously, the average person doesn't have it. The Beis Din keeps one, and they're makne it to the guy before the chalitza. But in other words, if it didn't actually belong to him, or the sandal shall ate, or they use a sandal made out of wood, or they use the left sandal on the right foot. In all those cases, chalitza kshera. In all those cases, the chalitza would be kosher. Ve'amrinan. Now, when we learn that in Masechta Yevamos, we ask man tana, which tana is it that says that? Because that's not necessarily the halacha. Amar Shmuel, Rav Meir. And in fact, Shmuel says that would be specifically according to Rav Meir. Namely, we're saying in our Mishnah that the amputee is allowed to go out with his wooden leg. So again, in other words, that we are considering it to be a shoe, there, even though it's made out of wood, therefore the same thing as far as chalitza. And therefore, as far as chalitza, it would be considered a shoe. So you see, therefore, Rav Meir is the one who, so Rav Meir would also say, if it's considered a shoe relative to the dinim of Chalitza, then it's also considered a shoe relative to the dinim of Shabbos, and therefore you'd be allowed to wear it on Shabbos. On the other hand, Rav Yossi says it's also, so Rav Yossi would also say in the same way that you can't use a wooden sandal for Chalitza. So you see, therefore, that Shmuel changed his mind because he's saying that Mishnah goes only according to Rav Meir, whereas if he had the original version of our Mishnah as we quoted it originally, then he would say that Mishnah goes like Rav Yossi. And the Gemara continues, but after Rav Huna Hoderbeh, also Rav Huna changed his mind. So now, in the end, we have nobody left who holds according to the other version. So the version of the Mishnah is definitely the way we have it, that Rav Meir says it's Mutter and Rav Yossi says it's Osir, and that would mean the halacha is like Rav Yossi. Where do we see Rav Huna change his mind? The Tanya. We learn in a Braisa, sandal shel sayodin, a sandal that's used by workers with lime. Now lime, quick lime or whatever, is a material. They use it for, it's mentioned all over the place in Shas. They use it for plaster, they use it for making mortar or whatever. It's very sharp stuff. It's very alkaline. It's almost like oven cleaner or something. If you wore leather shoes while you were working with it, it would burn holes in the shoes, and then it would get on your feet, and then you'd get a nasty burn. Therefore, they would wear a sandal shel sayadin, which they're working with it. When they're working with it, Rashi gives two explanations. One is that it's made at and Rashi brings from his Rebbeim, that it's made out of wood. And the other explanation, Rashi himself prefers the explanation that it's made out of straw. Whatever it is, that kind of thing, is that it, that way it protects his leather shoes and his feet while he's working with the line. Anyway, so this sandal, Tamei Midras, so if the owner, if the one who's wearing it is a Zav, then it's able to become Tamei Midras, or somebody else wears it, the Pashtus. The Isha Chalitzas Bay, a woman can use it for Chalitza, because again, it would be considered a shoe in Halacha. The Yotzin by the Shabbos, and you would be allowed to walk outdoors with it on Shabbos, so they consider a shoe. Divrei Rabbi Akiva, all of that is according to Rabbi Akiva. So Rabbi Akiva would say, in other words, even though, again, as we talked about before, usually shoes are not made out of such materials. Usually shoes or sandals are not made out of wood or out of straw or whatever. But in this case, it can be considered, in this case, a shoe. Therefore, it's allowed to be worn on Shabbos. It's allowed to be used for Chalitza. So that's Rabbi Akiva. The other Chachamim did not agree with him. So we're going to see in a minute. So now we still have to figure out, where do we see that? Rabbuna changed his mind. So, Bahatanya, the question is, what do you know about Tanan, actually, because the Mishnah in Adias, as I grew up, points out, Hoduloi, we find in a Mishnah in Adias that actually the Chachamim did agree with Rabbi Akiva, that the sandal Shosayodin is Tamei Midras. So what do you mean over here that the Chachamim disagreed with him? So the answer is, Amar Rabbuna man Hoduloi Rab Meir, uman loy Hoduloi Rab Yosi. The answer is like this. When we say Chachamim in two different places, we have the first Braisa, and then we have the Mishnah from Adias. Those are two different Chachamim in both cases. The ones who Hoiduloi, the ones who the Mishnah in Adias says agreed with Rabbi Akiva that the thing is Makabel Tumah, that would be Rabbi Meir. Again, Rabbi Meir, who says over here in our Mishnah that the guy can go out on Shabbos with his wooden leg, meaning that he considers it to be a shoe. So therefore, he agrees, therefore, with Rabbi Akiva, that such a thing is considered a shoe, and therefore that he's allowed to wear it on Shabbos, and he's allowed to do, and you're allowed to do chalitza with it, etc. Whereas who are the Chachamim in the first Braita who don't agree with him? That would be Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi of our Mishnah, who says he's not allowed to go out with a wooden leg on Shabbos because he doesn't consider it a shoe. So the same thing. He holds, therefore, it's not considered a shoe. So not only you can't go out with it on Shabbos, but also it wouldn't be Makabel Tumah. It wouldn't be Makabel Tumah. Because it wouldn't be something that you could use for chalitza. Tosfos actually asks the question: if you say why wouldn't it be Makabel Tumah? I mean, the fact of the matter is, even if it's not a normal shoe, but fine, it is after all something that a person walks on. So Tosfos says that actually that's a reason to prefer Rashi's own explanation that it's made out of straw rather than his Rebbeim's explanation that it's made out of wood, because then if it's made out of straw, then it's easy to understand. It's so temporary, it's not going to last for very long, so therefore it can't really be considered something that would be Makabel Tumah, according to Rabbi Yossi. Okay, so anyway, the point is that the fact that Rav Huna refers to our Mishnah and says Rav Meir and Rav Yossi respectively, and says Rav Meir does consider it a keli, and Rameo does consider it a shoe, and Rabbi Yossi does not. That's exactly what we're saying in our version of the Mishnah, that Rameo allows him to wear it on Shabbos because he considers it a shoe, and Rabbi Yossi says he doesn't. So that shows that Rabbuna changed his mind about the correct version of the Mishnah. Okay. However, Rabbi Yosef says, because he's arguing with Rav Huna, man loy hodu loy Rabbi Yechon ben Nuri. Actually, Rabbi Yosef says, I have a different answer when we say, again, we had a braisa that said that the Chachamim disagreed with Rav Akiva on the status of this temporary shoe that the workers with lime wear. And then we had another Mishnah that said they are Moshe to Rav Akiva. So we said, Rav Huna says, we're talking Rav Meir versus Rav Yossi. Rav Yosef says, no, man loy hoyu loy. In the Braisa, who are the Chachamim who disagree with Rav Akiva and say it's not Makabel Tumah? Rav Yechon ben Nuri, that would be not Rav Yosef, but rather Rav Yechon ben Nuri. It's not. Namely, we learn in a Mishnah in Kalim, Kaveres Shokashu Shoferes Shokanim, a beehive or a beehive shaped basket made out of straw, or a tube made out of straw. Rabbi Akiva Matame, Rabbi Yechon ben Nuri Matame. Rabbi Akiva says that such things are Makabel Tumah because he considers them to be wooden kalim. So even though they're made out of straw, he considers them to be wood. Tosfos points out a reason why you might say that is we learned in Brachos a couple of different opinions about what the Eitz Hadas was. There was one opinion that it was wheat, that the Eitz Hadas was wheat, and wheat grows on straws, and the pasuk calls it a tree. So therefore, that might be a reason to consider straw to be like wood. So therefore, Rabbi Akiva would consider it like wood and would say it's Makabel Tumah. But Rabbi Yechon ben Nuri Matayr, whereas Rabbi Yechon ben Nuri says it's Tahor because he says it's not Makabel Tumah. because it's made out of straw, and straw is not makabel tumah. Okay. Again, so therefore, so Rabbi Yosef says that the, which opinion is it that says that you can't wear it on Shabbos? That would and that's not makabel tumah, etc. Not necessarily. Do we have to say it's Rabbi Yosef of our Mishnah? It could be also Rabbi Yosef from the Nuri. Actually, you have Mephoshim will explain the reason why doesn't like Rav Huna's explanation. Rishonim say is because maybe he says fine. Rav Yosi says in our Mishnah you can't wear it on Shabbos, but maybe not necessarily because it's not considered a shoe. Again, we mentioned that Tosfos and a number of other Rishonim learn that actually it is considered a shoe for sure, even though it's made out of wood. And therefore, they understand that the machloekas is really okay. It is considered a shoe, but you're not allowed to wear it on Shabbos because it may fall off. Okay, it comes out therefore the practical difference between them would be Rashi would say that you're never allowed to wear the wooden leg on Shabbos, even if it's tied on tightly and it's not going to fall off. And according to Tosfos and everybody else, it would be allowed as long as it's tied on tightly. Omamah, we said in the Braisa, sandal shosayavim tami midras. We said then that the sandal that the workers with line wear is makabel tumas midras. So the question is why? Halav lehi bochavi. Why should it be makabel tumas midras? It's not made to walk in. So even though again he leans his body on it, he leans his weight on it while he's working with it. But fact of the matter is, it's not really meant for that purpose. It's not really meant for walking on. In fact, Tosfos points out really fundamentally what he uses it for. I mean, he said he uses it to protect his shoes, but really what he does is he uses it like to smooth out the plaster or whatever. So why should it be makabel tumas midras? It's not. Its primary function is not really to walk in as a shoe or whatever. So it's just meant to protect his feet or to smooth out the plaster or whatever. The answer is Amar of Acha Baravula, Shekain Hasayed Matayo Boy Ad Shemagiel Abeisa. Because the guy who works with plaster doesn't just take it off as soon as he's finished his work. He sometimes walks home with it and then he takes it off over there. So therefore, he actually uses it as a functional shoe sometimes, and therefore it's Makabel Tumah Smidra. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah that we said, going back to the case of the wooden leg, we said that if the wooden leg has base kibble, the im yeshle base kibble ksisin, if it has a space in it to put in pads or rags or whatever of cloth in order to make it more comfortable to put a stump of his leg inside it, then we said it's tome, it's makabel tumah. So what kind of tumah? Amar Abaye, tumah tumas nes and tome midras. It's able to be makabel tumas nes, says Abaya, and other kinds of tumas as well, but not tumas midras, because he doesn't actually lean his weight on it. Mainly, what he wears it for is in order to hide the fact that he's missing his leg. So in other words, Rashi says, we learned earlier in our perek about the concept of amoid v'nasim alachtenu, that for example, if a person takes, let's say, a basket which is used to measure out grain, and he turns it upside down and sits on it, so we tell him, amoid v'nasim alachtenu, get up, we want to use it for our work, and therefore it's not makabel tumah unless it's actually meant for that purpose, or unless at least one of the major purposes that it's made for is for that purpose, to be able to sit on it. So therefore, by the same token over here, Rashi says, this wooden leg, given that it's not primarily meant for him to rest his body on, even if it has a space for pads in it, then it's only makabel tumas mes and other kinds of tumas, but not tumas midras. Rava Omar asked Tommy Midras. Rava says it actually would be Tommy Midras as well, because sometimes he does lean his leg and his weight on it as well. Okay, Omar Rava Minamina. So Rava says, where do I get this that I'm saying that just because that even if you don't always lean on it, only sometimes, then something can be makabel tumas midras? The Tanan, because we have a Mishnah in Masechta Beitza, Agolo Shokotan, a child's wagon, So Rashi explains that we're just talking about like a baby's carriage, and he sits on it and you carry him around in it and whatever. So such a thing, tamei midrash, because sometimes the baby leans on it. So Tosfos says, if we're talking about a baby carriage, what do you mean? Sometimes the baby is always in it. So Tosfos says, we're actually not talking about a baby carriage. What we're talking about, Tosfos says, is a baby's walker. Like you think of, I mean, nowadays you don't see walkers much anymore because they've decided they're dangerous. It's too likely the kid is going to fall downstairs or whatever. But, you know, when we were growing up, we knew of these things. We have this frame that you strap the baby inside, and it learns to walk around using that. And sometimes it leans on it. So such a thing, if the child happens to be a zov, is makabel tumah, it becomes tumah midrash because the kid sometimes leans on it. So you see the same thing, that even though he doesn't always lean on it, but because sometimes he does, that's enough to make tumah midrash. So therefore, Robert says the same thing over here with the wooden leg. Abaye says it's not the same thing. Hossam stomach of Abaye over there, the child leans his whole weight on it very often. Over here, it's only once in a great while that the guy leans on it, that the guy leans his leg on it. Mostly, he uses it in order to hide, because again, as Tosfos has said, he walks around with crutches most of the time. He only rests the stump of his leg on the wooden leg once in a while. Therefore, it's not enough for it to be makabel tumas midrash. Amar Abaye Menah Minalos. Abaye says, okay, as far as me, where do I get my opinion that unless you use it very often to lean on, it's not makabel tumas midrash? It's like this, the Tanya we learn in a Braisa. Makel shel zkenim tora mikum. A walking stick that's used by old people when they walk is not makabel tumas. So it's not makabel even tumas midrash, even if the guy is a zub. And again, the reason is because even though sometimes the guy leans on it, again, we're not talking about a person who can't walk without a cane. We're talking about a person who usually could walk without it, but sometimes he leans on it. That's not enough to be makabel tumas midrash. So the same thing. Abaye says the same thing with the wooden leg, that it's not makabel tumas midrash. Which, by the way, Rashi points out, you could think that maybe the walking stick is not makabel tumah because it's not a kli kibble, because it's a plain wooden keli and it needs to have a receptacle in order to be makabel tumah. Rashi says that's only as far as tumah from a mess or a sheret or what have you. For those, it needs to be a kli kibble. For tumas midrash, it doesn't need to have that. All it needs to do in order to be makabel tumas midrash is that it's meant to lean on, and a person leans on it. And it doesn't matter then whether it has a receptacle or not. So therefore, in our case over here, it would actually be makabel tumas midrash if the guy leans on it often, but because he doesn't, then therefore it's not makabel tumah. And Abaye says, therefore, that's the proof that he needs to lean on it very often, or most of the time, in order for it to be makabel tumah. The Rava, what would Rava answer to that? He says, Hosam l'taruti sugi avida. He says the difference is over there, the old man uses the walking stick only in order to straighten out his steps. By the way, it's interesting, you see the word sugya over here is used in the sense of steps. So now you understand, when we talk about a sugya in the Gemara, it means when we go through the steps of figuring out what the correct understanding of the Mishnah is, or of the Halacha, or whatever it is that we're discussing. Anyway, so over there, he uses it in order to keep his steps straight, and in order to straighten himself up, because his leg is shaped. So he never uses it to support his whole body. So it's not makabel tumas midrash. Hacha, but when it comes to the wooden leg, lismech ilavei hu da'avida, after all, it is sometimes meant for him to support his whole weight on it, the samich alei, and in fact he does, and therefore Rava says it would be makabel tumas midrash. Okay. So that's the machlokes. That's as usual when you have a machlokes, Abaye and Rava, as usual, the halacha is like Rava, therefore the wooden leg is tumah midrash as well. Okay. Next. We said in the Mishnah, Tmei and Midrash, we said we had the third case of the person who can't get around normally. We have the person whose legs and whose thigh muscles and whatever have atrophied, and he's not able to get around even on his knees, like the second case in the Mishnah. So we said he had that chair with the little benches on it that he uses to push himself forward all the time. And then he has little pads that are attached to his knees, where we said that to whatever's left of his legs, that we said tmei and midras. We said those things are tmei midras. The ein yotzin behen b'shabbos. We said he's not allowed to go out with them on Shabbos because they may fall off. The ein nechnasin behen l'azorah, and he's not allowed to go with them into the azorah because they're considered shoes. So the Gemara says, "Tani Tana Kamez Rabbi Yechanan, a Tana Torah Braisa in front of Rabbi Yechanan." Not like that. Nichnosin behind the Azara. You are allowed to go with them into the Azara because the Tana of the Braisa was saying, that they're not considered shoes. Amale, so Rabbi Yechanan says to him, "How could you say that? Ani Shona Isha Chelatis Bay. I learn in a different Braisa that a woman could actually do Chalitza with those if the Yavam is in a situation like that where he sits in such a chair and has such a support, she's able to take one of those off his leg or off the bottom of his leg and it's considered chalitza. V'as amet nechnosin. And you're saying a braisa that says you're allowed to go with them into the azara. Tani ein nechnosin behen la'azara. You have to correct your braisa ein nechnosin behen la'azara and say, like it said in our Mishnah, that you're not allowed to go with them into the azara. The Ritva explains, so what was the Tana thinking? The Tana of the Braisa was thinking that we're talking about maybe they're not leather pads, but rather blocks of wood. And again, wooden blocks are not necessarily considered shoes, so therefore maybe you're allowed to go with them into the Azara. And Rabbi Yechanan is clarifying to him that no, they're not wooden blocks, they're actually leather pads. Being leather pads, they are definitely considered shoes in Halacha, as long as they go at the bottoms of his feet or his legs. Because, again, they're made out of leather, and leather is definitely considered a shoe in Halacha, and therefore you wouldn't be allowed to go with them into the Beis Mikdash, because, as we learned at the end of Brachos, you're not allowed to wear shoes into the Beis Mikdash out of respect. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, like Kasmin Tehora, we said that like Kasmin are not Makabel Toma, you're also not allowed to wear them on Shabbos, outside, the Maila Kasmin. So we have three different explanations in the Gemara. Amar Abahu Chamra De'akva. Rabbi Bahu says it means a chamra de akva. And what is that? Rashi gives an explanation. It means like this. It's a donkey-shaped thing that clowns carry around on their shoulders. It's made in such a way they entertain people with it. They make it look like they're riding on it as if it was a donkey that they're riding on, and really they're carrying it around themselves. So again, it's not makabel tumah because it doesn't really have any particular function or anything like that. So therefore, it's not makabel tumah. But you can't take it out on Shabbos because it's not serving as a tachshit either. It's considered carrying it on Shabbos. Different explanation that Rabbi Hanano brings and the Aruch brings is chamra de'akti would be a wooden hand. So before we were talking about a wooden leg, now we'd be talking about a wooden hand. Okay, so that's explanation number one. Rava bar Papa Omer Kshiri. Rava bar Papa says a second explanation of Lekatmin, it means stilts. So you have tall pieces of wood with footrests on them, where a person uses them, for example, when they're walking on swampy ground and they don't want their feet and their shoes to sink into the mud, so they walk around on stilts. Rashi asks the question, in that case, if you're going to say it's stilts, why on earth are they not makabel tumas midras? You support your whole body on them. Tosfos answers that we're not just talking about stilts, like low stilts, the kind that a person uses for practical purposes to get around in swamps. We're talking about the really tall kind of stilts that clowns wear. You know, we're coming up to Lag BaOmer now. In a normal year, we would be having some sort of Lag BaOmer parade and some sort of Lag BaOmer entertainment, and there would usually be clowns, and you regularly see you have some of them go up on stilts, and, you know, they have the stilts hidden under their pant legs, and they look like they're 10 feet tall. So those kinds of stilts, therefore, Tosfos says that's the kind we're talking about that are not makabel tumah because you don't actually use them for any functional purpose. You could just as well get around just as easily without them. You're only doing them for fun, to entertain and dance around on, so those are not makabel tumah. Rava bar Ravuna on the pound. Rava bar Ravuna says a third explanation of the lekasmi of our Mishnah that it's pound, which is, Rashi says, it's what he mentioned in the Mishnah, a mask that you use to play frightened children. The Aruch brings a different explanation. Apparently, that it means that it's a kind of thing. It's like a bib that old people wear to prevent themselves from drooling all over their clothing. Okay. So altogether, you have three explanations in the Gemara of what Loikatmin are. Two of them, you have variant explanations among the Rishonim. So altogether, you have five explanations. So in any case, all of those things are not Makabel Truma, and all of those things, you're not allowed to go outside on Shabbos wearing them. Mishnah says, more things that you're allowed to go out with on Shabbos, Habonim Yotzin B'Ksharim, boys are allowed to go out on Shabbos wearing Ksharim. Ksharim means knots. We're going to see in the Gemara what kind of knots we're talking about. Uvnei Melochim Bazugin, and princes, king's sons, are allowed to go out on Shabbos with bells attached to their clothing. Now, these bells don't have clappers in them. If they had clappers, it would be osur. It would be osur midrabanan, because you're not allowed to use musical instruments on Shabbos. Like this, they have them as decoration on their clothing, so they're allowed to wear them on Shabbos. The post can say it does have to be sewn to the clothing. We learned earlier in the parak, for example, we talked about when you had a slave that has bells on his clothing. We said there it has to be sewn on so it doesn't fall off on Shabbos when he carries them. Here it's the same kind of thing. They have to be sewn on. The chol adam, and actually that's true of every person, even a poor person is allowed to go out on Shabbos wearing bells on his clothing. But again, the Chachamim talk about the typical situation, and typically only princes go out wearing such things on Shabbos. But in fact, anybody else would be allowed to, because as we talked about before, once you have something that certain people wear, as long as it's a regular thing that people wear, that people of a certain social class or in a certain place or whatever wear, then other people are allowed to wear it also. We said, for example, shepherds wear sacks, and therefore anybody's allowed to wear a sack on Shabbos. We said Jewish women in Arabia go out with their face completely veiled except for their eyes, and therefore Jewish women in other places are allowed to do that, etc. So the same thing here with the belt. So the question is, my ksharim, what are these ksharim that we're saying that boys are allowed to go out with on Shabbos? Omer, Adam Mori, Omer of Nachman, Bar Boruch, Omer of Ashi, Bar Oven, Omer of Yehuda, Kishurei Pua. They are not containing Pua. Pua is a type of herb. They use it in particular, they use it to make a kind of red dye. So you had, there was a certain, they would use it, they would tie up pieces of pua in a knot, in a piece of cloth as a knot, and they would hang it around a person's neck for refuah. Rashi says, I don't know what kind of sickness it was meant to cure, but there was some kind of sickness that a person would have, and that a person could have, and they would wear this pua in order to heal it. It would be one of these kinds of things, like we learned earlier in the Perek about Kameis, where we had about a Kameis with names of Hashem or Malachim or whatever, or Kameis with herbs in them. So this would be similar to a Kameis. Amar Abayas says in this connection, let me explain to you what the details are about how you make such things. Omrali Ein, my mother told me as follows. Now, as Mara mentioned in Kedushin, that this wasn't Abayas' actual mother. His mother passed away in childbirth. He was raised by a foster mother. But this foster mother raised him, and throughout Shas, he quotes her all the time. He quotes her on all kinds of, with all kinds of medical advice. And that's whenever he says, Omrim Yem, it means his foster mother. Anyway, she told me as follows. Tlosa Moitni, if a person wears three knots of pua like that, then it helps stop the sickness so it doesn't get worse. Chamisha Masu, if you wear five of them, then it heals the sickness. And Shiva, people are Kshafim Mali, and seven are so good that even if a person has been affected by black magic, if somebody casts a magic spell on them or whatever, so seven knots, the pua will be effective in getting rid of that. However, the Gemara continues, Omer of Akaba Yaakov, that only works though, the knot of pua is only effective if the sun and moon have not seen it. So in other words, it wasn't outdoors where the sun or the moon shines on it. V'loi chazi mitra, and it wasn't outdoors when it rained. V'loi shmiya le'koil barzala, it was never within earshot of metal, iron tools being banged or whatever, the cold town of Gilda, or the sound of a rooster crowing, the cold nigri, or the sound of footsteps. You need all of those criteria meets all these criteria, only then is it effective for the healing or whatever. In that case, effectively, the puta, which is the pua, has fallen into the well. In other words, it's impossible to keep all of those details. Inevitably, you're going to have that at one time or another. It was outdoors, or it was within earshot of iron, et cetera, et cetera. And therefore, in effect, it's not going to be a very effective thing if there's no way to do it like that. There's a kind of funny thing, by the way. The Magen Avraham in Or HaChaim, after it deals with the dinim of davening and the dinim of a shul or whatever. So then it deals with the dinim of how a person should go about arranging their day. After a person finishes davening, they should sit and learn a little bit of Torah. So is the caption of the caption of the siman in Shulchan Aruch. So and it mentions over there about the importance of eating breakfast. So the Magen Avraham over there brings from the Mordechai HaAruch, who says that when you're eating past Shachris, when you're eating breakfast, it's only effective if it has all of these criteria. Only if it grew from grain that there were no chickens around, and there were no boats around, and so forth. And then the Magen Avraham says apparently whoever wrote that mixed up the word puta, which we're talking about over here in the Gemara, which means the pua, which means this herb, with the word pas, which means bread. The Magen Avraham says no such thing. There's no, that when you eat pas chocolates, when you eat bread in the morning, and it's good for you, it doesn't matter whether the bread was grown in a place where there are chickens or metal or day or night or what have you. Okay, so the point is, in other words, so we're saying that that's the kshorim of the Mishnah. So, okay, Rav Nachman Meir Cook saying, practically speaking, you may have a very hard time getting the kshorim to actually work, given all those criteria that Rav Acha bar Yaakov said. But nevertheless, you have, that such things do exist. And therefore, if a boy is wearing it on Shabbos, it has to wear such kshorim because of the sickness, then he's allowed to wear them on Shabbos. The problem with that is, my uyabonim, in that case, why is the Mishnah focusing specifically on boys? After the bonis nami, then the same thing is true of girls as well. And my uyakanim after the gerim nami, and why after young children, it would be even older people. In other words, why is the Mishnah then using the word habonim? It should just say yotzin b'ksharim. You're allowed to go out with ksharim on Shabbos. So it's not specific to boys. So therefore, the Gemara says, never mind that. Ela my ksharim. No. The ksharim of our Mishnah, therefore, are not these tishrei pua, not these bundles of pua herb that a person is wearing for refuah, but rather something else. Ki ha d'ama oven b'alhuna amar of chama b'agoya. Ben sheyesh le'gaguin al oven. When you have a son who very much misses his father, it's very hard for him. His father has to go away for a while, and he misses him very much. So much that it could affect his health. It's a kind of almost magical thing, it seems, but you do as follows. The father takes a strap or takes a shoelace off his right shoe, the kosheloi, the smoloi, and he ties it on the boy's left hand or left arm, and that way it helps, and that way it serves for refuah, and it serves to calm down the kid and make him not feel so bad. So again, it's a segula. It's not a naturalistic thing. There's not necessarily a natural explanation you could give why it works, but it works, and therefore, and you're allowed it. We're going to start talking about today, and we're going to continue tomorrow, Bez Hashem, about all kinds of segulos and supernatural cures and things like that, what's allowed and what's not allowed. You know, the Torah says you're not allowed to follow in the ways of the Amori, which is you're not allowed to do various kinds of superstitions. So we're going to see today and tomorrow, we're going to talk about which one, what kind of things are and aren't allowed.
So in camp, if when after visiting day, if you see the father's shoes missing the shoelace, you know why.
I guess so. That's a good point. although with that said, Rabbi Hananel mentions Rabbi Hanano mentions that what we're talking about actually is the father passed away, Rahman al-Flan. So what we're talking about is you use the shulet in order to prevent the kid from getting completely depressed by the fact that his father passed away, and it helps make him feel better after that. And the Ran brings something similar. What if the father is very sick and they're saying he's not likely to make it? Then they do the same thing. And what that helps, again, the segula that according to that is it prevents the son from to begin with becoming so attached to his father. That then, when the father passes away, Rahman al-Islam, that the child is going to be completely broken up. So like this, it helps with that. So according to that, then it doesn't necessarily have to do with visiting day. But okay. Amr Nachman, the simanach tefillin. The way to remember the right way to do it is tefillin. You take the tefillin with your right hand and tie it on your left arm. The same thing over here. It'll help you remember that you're supposed to take the shoelace from the right shoe and put it on the left arm. And the Gemara says, "B'chilufa sakanda." If you do it the other way around, if you mix it up, if you take the shoelace from the left shoe and put it on the kid's right arm, then just the opposite of sakana, then you make that now the kid's yearning for the father is going to be even worse. So therefore, you have to be careful to do it the right way. Okay. Now let's talk about other things that you're allowed to do for refuah on Shabbos. Again, we mentioned what Oven Bar Huna says in the name of Rav Choma Bar Gurya about this thing with the shoelace. So therefore, we're going to mention several other things from the same one, from Oven Bar Huna in the name of Rav Choma Bar Gurya that you're allowed to do on Shabbos for refuah. In general, we said there's many things of refuah you're not allowed to do on Shabbos, as we talked about here and there, because the Chachamim are concerned that you're going to grind up spices for the purpose. But when there's tzar involved, then, number one, it's something that never involves grinding up herbs anyway, and number two, there's tzar, then the Chachamim allow it. So here are some examples. Amr of Oven Bar Huna, Amr of Chama Bar Gurya, Sachufe Kosa Atiburi B'Shamta Shaper Dami. You're allowed to put a cup upside down on the navel on Shabbos. Meaning, in other words, you're talking about a person who has a stomach ache. What you do is you take a cup of water, you fill it up with water, you can fill it up with hot water, or you heat it up some other way or whatever, and then you turn it upside down and put it on top of his navel, on top of his belly button, and it helps to calm down his stomach ache. Rashi explains it like it pulls things back. The vacuum inside the cup kind of pulls things back into where they're supposed to be inside his stomach, inside his intestines. So therefore, you're allowed to do that on Shabbos. Again, there's no herbs involved. You're not going to be grinding up any herbs, which would be an issur on Shabbos. And since there's tzar, then you're allowed to do that. The Omer Oven Bar Huna Omer of Choma Bar Gurya. Another thing that Oven Bar Huna says in the name of Choma Bar Gurya. Mutar losuch shemen umelach b'shabbos. You're allowed to anoint a person with oil and salt on Shabbos, which they would do if the person was drunk. It would help cure their drunkenness. And for example, we have an example. He called it Rav Huna Midei Rav. For example, when Rav Huna was coming back from the yeshiva of Rav, the Rav Midei Rav Chia, and similarly in the previous generation, when Rav was coming back from the yeshiva of Rav Chia, Rav Chia Midei Rebbe, and Rav Chia in the generation before that, when he was coming back from Rebbe's yeshiva, he have a mivsimi, if they were drunk. Now, why would they be drunk? Rashi explains that they would give them wine to drink over there. We know that the Gemara mentions in some other places, in Sanhedrin and in some other places, that drinking wine helps open up a person's mind and makes them be able to learn Torah and to be able to explain Torah better. In fact, we're going to see something about that at the end of the parak tomorrow, Beth Hashem. But sometimes they would drink a little too much, and now they're a little tipsy. So what would they do in order to help them with that? Maisi mishcho milcha. They would bring oil and salt. The shayfi lahula gavaisa diadaihu gavaisa dekarayu. They would rub the oil and the salt on the inside, meaning on the palms of their hands and on the soles of their feet. The amri, and they would say the following lachash with it. Just as this oil is becoming clear, because as when you smear oil on the body, then your body heat tends to make the oil clearer. So just like this oil is becoming clearer, late to chamre the plania by plonisa, then the wine that Plonius drank should become clear, should lose its potency, and he should be able to not be overcome by the effects of the wine. The Eloi, and if not, meaning if they didn't have those materials, if they didn't have oil and salt available on the spot, mighty shia the dana, they would take the stopper of a barrel, of the barrels in those days were made out of earthenware, they had a stopper also made out of clay, out of soft clay, and they would take that, the shori legamaya, soak it in water, the omer, and they would say the same lachash, ki hecha deleito hai shia, just as this stopper is becoming clear, because again, it's dissolving in the water, leito hamir de panya, batlanisa, then 20 batlanisa's wine should become clear, and the effect of it should go away. So you're allowed to do that on Shabbos, again, because there's no grinding up of spices involved, and it's not really a matter of refuah, because not like the person is sick per se, it's just they're a little tipsy, therefore you're allowed to do that. Okay. Another one, v'amah oven barhuna omer achoma baguya, mutur lechanek the Shabbos. You're allowed to choke somebody on Shabbos. Now, what does that mean? Why would you want to choke somebody? Rashi explains like this. If you have a vertebra, one of the bones in a person's neck has gotten dislocated. So now it's hard for him to move, it's hard for him to breathe or whatever. So what you do is you kind of hang him by his head for a minute in order that everything will get back into place. So it's sort of like you have, back in the day, I don't know if they still do this nowadays, but sometimes you had a person broke an arm or a leg or whatever. And they would put it in traction. They'd have it, you know, they'd suspend it. They'd have something where it's just hanging in the air, suspended from the ceiling, and that way things would get back into place faster. I don't know if they do that nowadays. I've heard much. I guess you can tell us whether they still put people in traction. But this sort of thing that we're describing over here is similar to that. Yeah, you pull the guy up by his head, and it resembles choking him in order to get the vertebra back into place.
It's done today still.
Okay, there you go then. Okay. So you're allowed to do that on Shabbos, again, because there's no grinding spices involved, and there's a lot of tsar, so it's very painful to have a dislocated vertebra like that, so you're allowed. Another one, v'omer oven barhuna omer akoma baguya, lapufa yinuka b'shabbos shapir dami. You're allowed to swaddle a baby on Shabbos. Now, after a baby is born, you often have the pressure of trying to get through the birth canal over there. Certain parts of the baby's body get dislocated. Some limbs may get dislocated. So what you do is you wrap up the baby tightly. You wrap up the baby tightly in cloth, and then you put a wide belt around it, Rashi describes, and it helps to, and that way it helps to get everything back into place so it doesn't stay dislocated. So again, you're allowed to do that on Shabbos for the same reason, again, because otherwise it's going to be very painful for the baby. Okay. So now, as far as that last one, the Gemara says, Rav Papa Masni Bonim. Rav Papa learned in the name of Oven Bahune, in the name of Rav Chama Baguya, two things in connection, Bonim, in the plural, two things in connection with healing children. On the other hand, Rav Zvid Masni Ben, Rav Zvid's version had that only one of those in connection, only one of those dinim in connection with a child came from Oven Bahune, and the other one, Rav Zvid says, came from somebody else. Rav Papa, Masni Boni, and Rav Papa learned two of them, two things concerning children, the Tabai Masni Mahuba Oven Bahuna. He learned that both of them came from Oven Bahuna, who said in the name of Rav Chama Baguya. So two of them, the one about the Kshorim, the one that we have at the beginning about the right shoelace and the left arm, and so that one, and also the one about swaddling the baby, both of those involve children. So the Papa learned that both of those came from Oven Bahuna. On the other hand, Rav Zvid Masni Ben, Rav Zvid's version was that there's only one din as far as a child that Oven Bahuna taught, Kamaisa ba Oven Bahuna. So the first one about the shoelaces, indeed, Kamaisa Masni ba Oven Bahuna. The first one, indeed, he learned in the name of Oven Bahuna. But the second one about swallowing the baby, he learned actually in the name of Rabbi Baba Chana. Because we also say that Rabbi Baba Chana said, we have it later on in the Masechta, that Rabbi Baba Chana said the same thing, that you're allowed to swallow a baby on Shabbos. So therefore, Rav Papa says that actually it was Oven Baruch Huna taught that. Rav Zvid says that it was Rabbi Baba Chana taught that second din. Okay. We mentioned before that Abaya had said that Abaya had quoted from his mother, meaning his foster mother, something about healing. We said over there about the Ksharim, about the Tishrei Pua. So now the Gemara is going to mention other things that his mother, that his foster mother taught him. Amr Abaya, Amrali Ein, my mother, my foster mother told me, Kol Minyoni the Shma De'ima. And whenever you're saying a spell or a lachash or whatever on a person, you always say it using the person's mother's name. You always say Pliny ben Pliny. Rashi says Minyoni literally means counting, because most of these kinds of lachshim, you have to say them, as the Gemara is going to say soon, most of them you have to say multiple times. So like Minyoni, you have to count the number of times you said it, so therefore a spell, a lachash, is called Minyoni. So you always use the mother's name in it. One idea is, and now we know it's not just when it comes to spells. When we make mishaberachs also, we daven using the mother's name. In general, most tefillahs, when we daven for a living person, we usually use the mother's name. There's a couple of ideas behind it. One of them, in fact, we find it already in Tillim. You have Ani Abicha ben Amasecha, David HaMelech says in Tillim, Roshiyala ben Amasecha. And one idea that's brought on it is because you always know 100% for sure who a person's mother is. There's always the possibility, I mean, usually we know who a person's father is, but there's always the infinitesimal chance that it's not really his father, that his mother actually had relations with somebody else. So therefore we mentioned the 100% definite thing, the mother. That's one reason. The other idea is, Afi Kabbalah, there's the idea that the mother has more to do with the guf and the father with the neshama. And therefore, when you're davening for a person who's alive and you're davening for their guf, then you use the mother's name. When after they pass away, then you use their father's name. There is one exception to that I know of. In Yizkor, you say the mother, you say the name of the nifter and their mother's name. I'm not real sure why that is, actually, given that usually when you say Mishnayos or other things who are mess, usually we use the father's name. I don't know why it is in Yizkor we use the mother's name. Okay. Anyway.
If that's the case, why is the mother giving the Yiddishkeit instead of the father? If the mother gives everything to the goof, so and the father to the neshama.
You should know. You know what? When you get down to it, the Alter Rebbe points out in Tanya in Perek Mem Tes that when we say that Hashem chose the Jewish people, Habercha Ba'ami Yisrael Ba'ava, it doesn't so much refer to choosing the neshama, because the neshama, there's nothing to choose. It's Chelek Elikami Ma'al Mamash. It means that Hashem chose the Jew's body, that a Jew's body is something special, different than a goy's body. So maybe it has to do with that. Just the fact that we're not saying, obviously, I mean, we learned in Nidda that the various components of the body come from both the mother and the father. We said there are five things that come from the mother and five things that come from the father. But in terms of the ruchniistic connection, the mother has more of a connection with the body, and the father has more of a connection with the neshama. That's what we're saying.
So why is the neshama is a Jewish neshama?
Okay, but I'm saying the body is a Jewish body as well. And in fact, when we're saying that Hashem chose the Jewish people, He chose our bodies. So therefore, maybe that's the point. Therefore, that the fact that we have it, the fact that we don't just have a Jewish neshama, the fact that we have that is in a Jewish body, that comes as a result of the mother.
So we say that the Hashem created the neshamas before He created the world, didn't
that's
we?
That's fine. And that's fine. And that's the point. In other words, that's the point the Alter Rebbe is saying over there, that when we say Hashem chose us, it doesn't mean the neshamas, it means the bodies. Okay, but let's go on. If you want to talk about that afterwards, we can continue afterwards. Okay. So Abaya says the rule is with all of these lachshim, you always use the mother's name. B'chol kitri v'smola, whenever you're tying something on, it always should be tied on the left side, like we said before about the shoelaces. Abaya says, Amr li ein, my mother told me, my foster mother told me, Kol minyoni demaforshi kidemaforshi. Any time where it says a certain number of times that you're supposed to say a lachash, then okay, it says what the number is. Then you have whether it says three or seven or what have you. But udaloy mafoshi, if it doesn't say how many times to say it, avoyin v'chad zimni, then you need to say it 41 times. It could also be that this is connected with the thing about the mother, because the word ein is gematria 41. I don't know though. I haven't seen anything like that. Okay. Tanarabanan, we learn in a Braita more about segulas that you're allowed to wear on Shabbos. Yotzin be'evin tkuma b'Shabbos. A woman is allowed to go out on Shabbos wearing an evin tkuma. An evin tkuma means a stone that preserves her pregnancy. Meaning, in other words, if she's pregnant, or as the Gemara is going to say soon, she might be pregnant, and she's concerned that she might miscarry. She might be from a family that regularly miscarries, or she herself may have before. So therefore, she wears this evin tkuma, and again, it has the segula of preventing her from miscarrying. So she's allowed to wear that on Shabbos. Mishum Rameir Omer after Mishkal Evin Tkuma. They said in the name of Rameir, not only she's allowed to wear the actual Evin Tkuma, she's even allowed to wear something that was weighed against an Evin Tkuma. Meaning, in other words, let's say, so you have an Evin Tkuma, is a certain kind of stone, and you have different Rishonim and Achronim talk about different possibilities of what an Evin Tkuma is. The El Yerabah brings to the Marshal that it's something like what we call nowadays a geode. It's a stone that has a natural hollow in it, and it has inside it has another natural stone inside. And then there's a couple of other possibilities, that it's a diamond, that it's a ruby, whatever. Anyway, the point is, let's say you had an Evin Tkuma that weighed exactly 1 pound, and you weighed something else against it, and also weighed exactly 1 pound. It also has that segula of being able to prevent a miscarriage. So they said in the name of the mayor that she's allowed to wear that as well. The law is shehipila, and it's not only if the woman already one time miscarried, ela shematato, she's even allowed to wear the Evin Tkuma outside on Shabbat, where she's concerned that she might miscarry, because again, for example, she comes from a family that has a history of miscarriages. The loisha ibra, and not only if she's already pregnant, not only if she knows already she's pregnant, ela shema tisaba b'tafo, she's even allowed to wear the Evin Tkuma if she has reason to think that she's going to become pregnant and miscarry, then she's already allowed to wear the Evin Tkuma on Shabbat. Now, this that we're saying, that a Mishko Evin Tkuma work, is only if, when you weighed it, it came out to be the exact weight. So in other words, you had the Evin Tkuma that weighed, let's say, a pound, you put something else on the scale, and punked, it happened to be the exact weight. But if, let's say, you first weighed it, and it weighed, let's say, the other thing weighed, let's say, a pound and a quarter, and therefore, okay, so you cut off a piece of it in order to make it exactly a pound, then it doesn't have that effect, and then you can't wear it on Shabbat. Boya baya mishko the mishko mai. Baya asked, what about if you have a weight against a weight? So what if you have the Evin Tkuma, weighed a pound. You weighed something else against that, and it also weighed exactly a pound the first time you weighed it, and we're saying that has the same segula. Does it transfer now to something else? If you now have a third thing that you weigh and you find is exactly a pound, and you weigh it against the other one, and it weighs exactly, are you allowed to wear that on Shabbos? Does it have the same effect? And once it's teku, we're not sure whether it has that effect, and therefore whether you're allowed to wear it on Shabbos. Okay, another thing Abaya brings from his foster mother, the Omer Abaya, Omerly Aim, my foster mother said to me, La'eshka bas yoma, if a person has a fever that comes back every day, now you have different kinds of fevers, in particular in Gemara terminology, and by the Rishonim, a lot of times fever refers specifically to malaria, which causes a high fever. And you have different kinds of malaria. You have different strains of it. Some of them come back every day, some of them every other day, some of them every third day, etc. So Abaya is quoting his foster mother that if it's the kind that comes back every day, what do you do to cure it? Lishko zuza chivra, you take a white, meaning a new zuz, so a newly minted zuz, which is white and shiny, I mean, it's silvery and shiny. The laser lamalata, you go to a place where they make salt, meaning you have places in those days, the usual way of getting salt was that they would dig ditches near the ocean or near a body of salt water, whatever. They would dig ditches, they'd channel some water into there, then the water would evacuate and you have less salt. So you go to such a place, you go to a salt pan like that, the lisko matale nyoka, you take an amount of salt equal in weight to the zuz. Well, a tsayri b'chalala de beit saber, you take that salt and you tie it in the hollow of your neck. So you have in front of your neck, you have the little area over there right above your collarbone. you tie it onto the neck over there. The nira baika, for that purpose, you tie it over there using a loop made out of hair. And you do that, and then that'll cure the fever. That'll cure the illness. It's a segula again. The eloi, if you can't get all those materials, late of a parshas drachin, then instead what you should do is sit by a crossroads, the chichazah shum shemana gamla, the dori midi, when you see coming by a large ant that's carrying something, lishkale, you take this large ant with the thing that it's carrying, the lishdiye the gubsed in a chosha, put it into a copper tube, the listmi of the avra, seal the tube shut with a piece of lead, the left made the shift in Gushpanki, then seal on top of the lead with 60 seals. Now 60, the Gemara a lot of times uses a very large indefinite number, so it doesn't mean exactly 60, not 59. It just means that you put different kinds of seals on top of it. So Rashi says, for example, let's say you put wax on top of it, and then tar, and then clay, etc. Different kinds of things like that. The Lavarzuli, then what you do is you shake it. The Lidoria, you carry it along with you. The Lemele, and you say the Lachash as follows: To unach olayu to unoi aloch. My burden, meaning my sickness, should be on you, on the ant, and your burden, whatever it was that you were carrying when I caught you, should be on me. However, Amalei Rav Acha Breder Rav Huna Rav Ashi, how does that work? The Dilma Inish Ashkase Ashkase. What if somebody else previously found the same ant and did the same thing, the Ifsekbe, and he got rid of his illness by putting it onto that ant? Because the Pashtus, I guess the idea is after you finish this whole thing, after the illness goes away, you don't keep the ant trapped in there. It would be Tzav Balachayim. You let it go. So somebody else may have used the same ant to cure themselves of some other illness. And now when you say to the ant, whatever you're carrying should be on me, then you're going to take on yourself whatever other illness the other guy got onto the ant before. So that doesn't work. Rather, the proper way of saying the lachash should be my burden and your burden should be on you. In other words, you keep whatever it was you were carrying until now and also take on my burden of the illness that I have. The eloi, and if not, again, if you can't accomplish that, lish, then you have a third way of accomplishing it. Lishko kuzachabta, you take a new jug, a new earthenware jug, Rashi says. The Leza Lanara, you go to the river, the Lemele, and you say to the river, Nahara, Nahara, river, river, Oizfan Kuza de Maya la Urcha de Ikali. Lend me a pitcher full of water because I have a trip that I need to go on. And the trip represents, so la Urcha doesn't mean a road, sorry, Urcha means for the Urach, for the guest that I have, meaning the sickness is personified as a guest. So I have a guest, lend me a jug of water for that. Then he should take the pitcher of water and circle it seven times around his head. And then spill out the water behind him back into the river. And then say to the river, Nara, Nara, spill Maya dihabli, take back the water that you lent me. Because the guest that came to me came today and left today, and that way, like you're throwing away together with the water, you're throwing away the sickness. Okay, and we'll continue tomorrow with various other kinds of things like this, and then we'll also discuss the general rule: why are such things allowed when they seem to be very superstitious kinds of things, like the way the Imodium did? Why are we allowed to do that? So we'll talk about that tomorrow, Beth Hashem.
Rabbi Alex.
Yeah.
Abaya, b'chai Yerucham Yaton.
Yeah. Yeah, an explanation that's why he was nicknamed Abaya, because Asher b'chai Yerucham Yaton, right. Yeah.
Okay, take care.